This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, March 1st of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, as Russia sets another war into motion, we'll hear from a CU Boulder professor about civilian displacements. Colorado's stated commitment to green energy has developed one of the largest renewable energy workforces in the country. Then, it's the latest edition of H2O Radio's This Week in Water. And we'll play our comment line, thoughts from listeners about what they hear on KGNU. At the bottom of the hour, we'll go to the BBC News headlines, then KGNU's science show, How on Earth explores the many ways to walk and the many benefits that can accrue from each. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, James Wise will be in the Boulder studio to bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Masks will become optional on the University of Colorado Boulder campus as of next Monday morning. University officials said they based the decision on encouraging trends in the decline of COVID-19 transmission and a significant decrease in COVID-19-related hospitalizations. Yesterday's announcement did note masks will continue to be required at the Wardenburg Health Center. University leaders are also asking everyone to show respect towards those who choose to continue to mask. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser has filed a lawsuit against 15 manufacturers of a firefighting foam that contains toxic chemicals. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The complaint, filed Monday, alleges that companies including Dow DuPont Incorporated manufactured, distributed, marketed, and sold firefighting foam that contains PFAS, knowing or should have known that PFAS chemicals harm the environment and human health. The Denver Gazette reports that Weiser's office announced that the manufacturer's foam allegedly contaminated water throughout the state. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the chemicals PFAS, also known as forever chemicals, build up in living organisms. High levels of PFAS chemicals are associated with serious diseases and increased risk of cancer. It is reported that forever chemicals don't break down in the body and that the blood of nearly all Americans contains some PFAS. The Attorney General's lawsuit seeks to require manufacturers of the chemicals to pay for all costs to investigate, clean up, restore, and monitor contamination at all sites in the state where PFAS was used, released, spilled, stored, or disposed of. This is the first lawsuit brought by the Attorney General during this ongoing investigation, and there may be more legal action to come. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Former Colorado Governor Bill Owens has formally resigned from his role as chair of the supervisory board to the Credit Bank of Moscow, one of Russia's largest banks. Owens told the Colorado Sun he resigned from the position several days ago, but delayed the announcement until he had spoken with other board members. Owens' involvement with the Russian investor-owned bank began in 2012, with his chair post beginning in 2013. Although the bank was not on the recent formal sanction list by the Biden administration, the administration did bar it from issuing shares and debt in the United States. Denver's Department of Housing Stability is seeking a service provider to run a safe parking pilot program for people maintaining the use of a personal vehicle while experiencing homelessness. The city issued the request for proposals yesterday and has set aside $150,000 in American Rescue Plan Act funds to pilot the temporary program. According to a city news release, the service provider will manage a safe parking site and provide on-site services. The future site will either be city-owned or controlled or have evidence of site control under permitted use. The Department of Housing Stability is accepting proposals through March 21st and will also host a virtual pre-proposal meeting this Friday. A group of about 300 people gathered outside Louisville City Hall Sunday to call on city officials to ease building codes that require new homes to comply with the latest International Energy Conservation Code. Demonstrators included Louisville residents who lost their homes during the December 30th Marshall Fire. According to the Daily Camera, many Louisville residents in recent weeks have spoken up against the new building code requirements because of the high cost in meeting the energy efficient standards. Fire victims say the new codes will add thousands of dollars to rebuilding costs and will be an added burden for those underinsured. The Louisville City Council is expected to discuss the building codes during this evening's meeting. On a related topic for rebuilding, Boulder County will host a virtual meeting tomorrow evening starting at 6:30 p.m. to provide details about the upcoming coordinated debris removal program, which is slated to begin this month. Both the county and the contractor, DRC Emergency Services LLC, will provide details as to what participants can expect as crews begin debris removal from destroyed sites. County officials are requiring registration for the Zoom meeting. Today's weather along the upper Metro Front Range includes sunny skies with highs in the upper 60s. Tonight, skies will be clear with temperatures in the low to mid 30s. The current temperature in Boulder is 37 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The United Nations Refugee Agency estimates more than 500,000 people have fled Ukraine since the start of the Russian military invasion last week. That number is expected to grow unless a peaceful resolution is found quickly. For more on what this implies for the large civilian population that had to leave their homes quickly on short notice, KGNU's Rosana Longo-Better spoke with Dr. Laura De Luca, who teaches a class on the anthropology of war and refugees at CU Boulder.
Based on your research and your understanding, what are the social complexities refugees experience?
So, great question. I think, first of all, to acknowledge the human dimension of this crisis and the people on the ground, the voices that we don't always hear. Very often, elders, women, and children can be affected the most. And we hear about refugees. There are many that are fleeing to Poland, but sometimes IDPs, people who are internally displaced but don't want to leave their homeland because of attachment, can be just as affected, if not more.
What are the risks they are being exposed to?
Well, they're being exposed to all kinds of military risks. I think as an anthropologist, one thing to do that's really important is look at a wide variety of sources, look at a more global context, not just U.S. media, but look at, Al Jazeera, BBC, other, reputable sources, and see things from a variety of perspectives. Also, we do field work. So if you can interview the people themselves on the ground, which is really what journalists, frontline journalists, are doing right now to see what their perspective is. That emic or insider perspective is really important.
What are the biggest challenges refugees face in the short and long term?
Being displaced from your home, that sense of meaning, the trauma that they're facing, not knowing, uncertainty. Physical risks. There have already been children on the ground, injured children and civilians injured. So physical risks, but also sometimes not as recognized are the emotional and traumatic experience. Even those who leave and are in Poland have left their home. And then there's also the survivor's guilt. If they've left family behind, that concern about the family and their safety.
What do you want others to know about this reality, that now we are facing a global crisis, a global war?
I think the diplomacy needs to continue. A sense of agency, that there are things we can do. What are the reputable organizations supplying aid? Is it Red Cross? Is it, UNHCR? Is it other organizations that will be emerging and really doing due diligence, not just giving money, but making sure that these are reputable organizations that are helping people directly on the ground. Supporting journalism. Journalism, independent journalism, is really important so that we're getting accurate stories and getting, you really care about that human dimension yourself. So like that understanding what's happening and continuing to talk to the Ukrainian people, but also covering the Russians, the Russian protesters who are taking risks with their own lives. There's a big movement, thousands of people risking their lives protesting the war. And so paying attention across scales, you know, local, national, global, but really also just that human dimension back to those directly being affected.
Who will you say tends to be the most vulnerable during this crisis?
You know, it's interesting because I've been watching all kinds of different sources, and I saw an elderly woman saying, "I'm not leaving my home because, you know, I'll die here." So I think elderly people who are disabled, who have a harder time moving, obviously, like, class and, you know, having the privilege to have a car and, you know, the gas to be able to go to Poland, like all those kinds of people who don't have those resources are often not able to flee. So again, we overlook the IDP or the internally displaced person and pay attention more to the refugee or the person fleeing across a border. Both are at different kinds of risks, but I would say elderly, children, disabled, people who don't have the financial resources to flee and then create a new life in a new place. You can only stay with friends or relatives, or, you know, how do you recreate a new life?
With this crisis that we are facing right now, there's also other crises that are looming, like the climate crisis that we are all afraid. So what's your perspective about that? Are we ready globally?
As an anthropologist, I'm going to point to some filmmakers who've made a really big impact. Chinese filmmaker Ai Weiwei, who's a global artist and activist, created a film called Human Flow. It's now about 4 or 5 years old, but it really deals with the number of borders that we're building instead of opening borders, that we need to be more proactive in thinking about these things. And you're absolutely right, that intersectionality of climate refugees and climate crises, many of the underlying causes, like when we look at Darfur, there's also a huge drought. So these kinds of things are intersectional. Even in Boulder, we saw the Marshall Fire, which is, you know, a climate form of displacement, only 2 months ago. So even locally, we're seeing those kinds of things. And yes, we absolutely have to be more prepared and also have dialogue across difference and across party lines and different perspectives to really prepare for this crisis. There are 75 million people worldwide, according to the UNHCR, who are displaced. And that's only increasing. And also kind of redefining what is a refugee. That was kind of in the 1950s when, you know, the IRC was formed, and term is changing. And I think that climate piece, you absolutely are correct that that's becoming intersectional also with global capitalism and overuse of resources, and oil is a big factor. So there's lots of intersectional factors. Thank you for bringing that up. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for this perspective. I have been speaking with Laura De Luca, PhD and anthropology teaching assistant professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. We have been talking about the experience of the refugees that right now are fleeing Ukraine. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longobete.
Colorado's commitment to get 100% of its electricity from renewable sources by 2040 has made the state a leader in green sector jobs. That's according to a new report. The state is working to realign apprenticeship programs and community colleges to ensure that there will be enough skilled workers to meet demand. Garrett Galatis has more.
Colorado's commitment to clean energy has made the state a leader in green jobs, boasting the third largest green workforce in the country. According to a new Working Nation report, some 30,000 Coloradans work in the green sector. Governor Jared Polis says Colorado is leaning into securing the good jobs of tomorrow rather than good jobs of yesterday.
And that aligns well with our forward-looking vision on air quality and climate to make sure that Colorado is a leader in the clean energy revolution in jobs across the continuum.
Last year saw more than 12,000 job openings in Colorado's green sector, more than the number of job postings for security officers and nursing assistants. Workers with clean energy skills also earn over $4,000 more per year on average compared with workers without those skills. The skills most in demand are related to renewable energy, energy efficiency, and energy conservation. Brian Cook with the Construction Education Foundation points to its PTEC program, which is working to incorporate the latest clean energy trends. The program allows Colorado high school students to earn trade certificates and associate's degrees.
They do have a solar stackable credential. And so it's really trying to take that kind of expertise of the Interstate Renewable Energy Council and roll it into the high school program.
Colorado's goal of reaching 100% renewable electricity by 2040 should fuel demand for skilled workers for decades to come. The governor says Colorado is also uniquely positioned to draw more green operations to the state because of its 300 days of annual sunshine, strong winds, and numerous geothermal characteristics.
It's really all of the above. It checks the boxes for really the best place to locate a clean energy company, including leading the way on cutting edge developments of the workforce and adapting our apprenticeship and community college system to meet those needs.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Time now for This Week in Water with H2O Radio's Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
The environmental consequences of the war in Ukraine. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The world watched in horror last week as Russian forces invaded Ukraine in an unprovoked act of aggression. The full extent of the toll and trauma may not be known for some time. Also to be assessed will be the impact on the environment.
One concern is damage from nuclear material and other toxic chemicals stored throughout the country. Russian forces occupied the abandoned Chernobyl nuclear power plant, which in 1986, when under the control of the Soviet Union, was the site of the world's worst nuclear disaster.
The meltdown sent radioactive clouds over parts of Europe and left a 1,000-square-mile fallout zone of contaminated soils and waste that remains dangerous to this day.
Experts are warning that explosions and even tank and truck movements in the area might disturb nuclear waste, a problem exacerbated by staff who are conducting decommissioning of the plant reportedly being taken hostage.
Russian missiles hit an oil terminal southwest of the capital, Kyiv, and people were warned about possible toxic fumes. Ukrainian President Zelensky's office said Russian forces also blew up a gas pipeline in Kharkiv, the country's second largest city, and residents were told to protect themselves from the smoke by covering their windows with damp cloth or gauze.
There has been growing concern of the environmental consequences of the conflict in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine. It's heavily industrialized and has many chemical factories, and also home to remnants of Soviet-era nuclear test sites and abandoned mines, which have been leaching toxins into local waterways.
In addition, conflict in the area has degraded wastewater infrastructure, which is leading to pollution of local rivers. UNICEF says access to clean drinking water has been a daily challenge for residents of the Donbas region.
The weapons of war themselves are environmental hazards. Burned out tanks, transport vehicles, and downed aircraft leave behind toxic contamination that could affect ecosystems for years to come.
A first-ever report from the UN Environment Program says that wildfires are becoming more intense and frequent, occurring in places that have never been affected.
The researchers say climate change will increase the risk of devastating fires by almost 14% in just 8 years, and by nearly 60% by the end of the century.
The risks vary around the planet. In some areas like sub-Saharan Africa, drought has killed off grasses, reducing fires over the past 20 years. However, wildfires are flaring up in unexpected places like peatlands that are drying out, and on thawing permafrost where there are no resources to fight fire.
The UN researchers said that in places where there have always been wildfires, they're burning longer and hotter. While the report focuses on extreme fire events, the authors say that even smaller ones will increase as land use changes and as populations grow.
Not all fires are harmful, and some serve an ecological purpose. However, the report says we are not prepared for those that burn over thousands of square kilometers and urges a reallocation of financial resources from fighting fires to preventing them.
A report out last week from the International Energy Agency said that methane leaks from oil and gas pipelines, wells, and coal operations are 70% higher than what governments are reporting.
Methane is responsible for nearly one-third of the global warming that has occurred since the start of the Industrial Revolution, even though it remains in the atmosphere much shorter than CO2.
The agency said if the world's methane leaks in 2021 had been plugged, the amount of gas captured could have supplied all of Europe's power needs.
There is existing technology to capture leaking methane and not vent it or flare it off by burning. Norway has introduced strict regulations and has some of the world's best infrastructure. According to the report, global emissions from oil and gas operations would fall by more than 90% if all producing countries matched Norway's efforts.
And finally, eating fruits and vegetables are good for your health, of course, but can the manner in which they're grown make them more nutritious? A new study says yes.
Research from the University of Washington found that using regenerative farming practices, such as not tilling the soil, adding cover crops, and having plant diversity, affects the nutritional content of the food.
In side-by-side comparisons, farms following soil health practices for at least 5 years had crops with better nutritional profiles than the same ones grown on neighboring conventional farms.
They also contained more vitamins and minerals, as well as more phytochemicals, compounds that have been shown to reduce inflammation and boost human health.
Additionally, they were lower in sodium, cadmium, and nickel, elements considered detrimental.
The researchers believe the reason is that soils at farms using regenerative practices had more microbes and fungi, which boost beneficial compounds in crops.
The study was small, only involving 10 farms, mostly in the Midwest and in the eastern U.S., so the researchers plan to do more trials and take another bite of the apple.
That's it for This Week in Water, which is sponsored by Bring Back the Blue, working to remove plastics from the ocean to support energy projects and the blue economy. Learn more at bringbacktheblue.blue.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts on what they hear on KGNU.
Hi, I'm a listener member, and I'm listening to the Alan Watts program today on Tuesday. And I've been listening to that program for years. It took me a while to discover it. I wasn't sure I liked it, but it really grew on me, and I enjoy listening to it every week. What's being aired today is a new format, which is reminding me of like a highlight film of a basketball game, or maybe a sort of a, you know, joke excerpts from a movie, a comedy that you'll maybe see on the trailer or something. They're all great excerpts, but I think it really impoverishes. I don't think it is as enriching as the original that you were playing, because Alan Watts delivered talks that had like a whole meaning behind them and a message behind them. It wasn't just some quick little insights. It was actually ideas that were strung together to make a much deeper point that actually couldn't be understood from a soundbite. So I find this new version really unsatisfying, and I really hope that you will go back to the original, which I think much more fully captures the intellectual richness and deeper insights of Alan Watts. I'm not a Buddhist. I'm not someone who necessarily comes from a perspective of wanting to listen to something like that, but he really, I think, had some very valuable insights that I don't think you'll get from this little soundbite approach. So I hope you'll consider going back to the original. Thank you.
If anyone else is wondering about last week's Alan Watts program, no, I did not change the format. I just selected a program from the Alan Watts Library, like I do every week, and landed on that particular episode. I'll make a note of how the format for that particular episode is not one of a long-form lecture. If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Comments longer than 90 seconds may be edited for brevity in order to give everyone who leaves a message a chance to speak. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sudler, Franny Halperin, and Eric Galatis for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.
Your music cool or caliente. Simón, que you'll hear it all on Corriente. Música para la gente.
Una nación bajo Dios indivisible con libertad y justicia para todos.
2 hours of Latin music and cultura latina every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock only on KGNU. KGNU la la.